Thank you, Brittany. And I will introduce our next speaker, Dr. William Sook, who is the director of the Superfund Research Program.
Thank you, Heather. Hi, welcome to the Superfund Research Program Funding Opportunity Web Seminar. I'm Bill Sook. I'm director of the Superfund Research Program here at NIEHS. First of all, I want to thank you all for participating in this webinar. We see this as an opportunity to reach out to potential grantees, answer questions about the program, and provide contact information for future questions. We're very pleased that there is so much interest in our program. There are over 100 registrants. From a quick survey of the participant list, it appears we have individuals who might be new to the SRP and its funding mechanisms, as well as a number of veteran applicants who are probably well-versed in the program. For this reason, we've designed the presentation to provide a little something for everyone. We've highlighted the nuts and bolts about the P42 funding opportunity, but also providing some tips to share about the nuances of putting together a competitive application. But my feeling is that the real trick of putting together a competitive application is to contact us early on in the process and to keep that communication open as you put together your application. We have a whole room full of NIEHS staff here at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, that are ready to present a brief overview of the P42 application and review process. We'll then have some time for live questions at the end, so please have your questions ready. This slide shows the SRP legislation under the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, otherwise known as SARA, that was done in 1986, which allows NIEHS the flexibility to create university-based centers to conduct scientific research to address a wide array of scientific uncertainties facing the exposure to hazardous substances. The full title of this program is the NIEHS Superfund Hazardous Substances Basic Research and Training Program. The scope of the SRP centers is taken directly from SARA and includes, you can read them there, but I'm going to go over them, advanced techniques for the detection, assessment, and evaluation of the effects on human health and hazardous substances, methods to assess the risks to human health presented by hazardous substances, methods and technologies to detect hazardous substances in the environment, and basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and or toxicity of hazardous substances. The complex problems related to sites impacted by hazardous substances require the expertise of multiple biomedical and environmental science and engineering disciplines. In addition to our mandates, our program is guided by our strategic plan. Plan stresses our continued dedication to program relevance and identifies our key stakeholders as EPA and ATSDR, as well as other agencies and entities responsible for sites impacted by hazardous substances and the communities living near these sites. We also highlight the importance of programs research to achieve impact and promote innovation. So, during today's presentation, I encourage you to consider how to design meritorious scientific studies and centers that are relevant to key stakeholders and bring innovative research to the practice of reducing hazardous substances and preventing exposures. Applicants are encouraged to refer to the SRP strategic plan, and you can see that link here down at the bottom of the slide, which describes and defines the objectives and goals of the SRP in order to address its mandates. Before I move on, I want to mention that the SRP has several funding mechanisms, and I am also providing a link to the SRP website for you to access other funding opportunities. But today's call will focus only on the P42 multi-project center funding opportunity. And with that, I will pass it off to Heather Henry. Thank you all for participating.
Thank you, Bill. I also want to mention that while we try to cover most of the aspects of the RFA in this presentation, this is by no means all of the information that is provided in our RFA. Thank goodness we're not going to read the whole thing. But it's really important that you do read the entire RFA and look over the resources that we provide on our website. Those resources include suggested research and activities, tips for applicants, as well as additional resources. And again, this webinar presentation is meant to complement the RFA and address your questions, but we will not have time to go over the RFA in extensive detail. So to begin, the goal of the NIEHS Superfund Research Program Centers is to improve public health by supporting integrative multidisciplinary research. In addition, SRP-funded research is expected to provide fundamentally sound science while providing data, information, and knowledge to inform the risk assessment and remediation management processes. Therefore, investigators should seek input from stakeholders and visit our other resources pages during application development and identify critical research issues for which fundamental science is needed. Also, the complex problems related to sites impacted by hazardous substances require the expertise of multiple biomedical, environmental science, and engineering disciplines. So applicants responding to this funding opportunity announcement are expected to design a research center that integrates biomedical science with environmental science and engineering. Before we continue, I also want to reiterate the importance of reaching out to SRP staff if you are considering applying to this RFA. It's best to contact us early in the process to ensure that you will be responsive to this RFA. We know it's a lot of work to put one of these applications together, so we want to help you in your success in this endeavor. And next slide. Here we've listed many key dates. We hope that you print this out and post this somewhere. The RFA is open, or the earliest receipt date is November 19th. The letter of intent and application due dates are posted here. Please be sure that you submit everything on time. We will hear a little bit more about that later on, particularly from Janice Allen, our scientific review officer. Okay, now that you've committed those dates to memory, we can go to the next slide. SRP Center grants support problem-based solution-oriented research, and centers consist of multiple integrated projects representing both biomedical and environmental science disciplines. The center cores are tasked with administrative, research translation, data management and analysis, community engagement, research experience, and training coordination, as well as research support functions. Centers should demonstrate that interactions between projects and cores is necessary to resolve a problem that the center proposes. Furthermore, integration and interaction should be demonstrated between biomedical and environmental science and engineering projects as they contribute to the center's goals. In addition, the research emanating from the center and the interactions between projects and cores should be incorporated into sustainable solutions that take into account environmental, social, and economic issues. SRP also firmly supports transdisciplinary research, such as adapting technologies and approaches from one field and applying them to other fields in order to solve challenging environmental health problems. So forward-looking anticipatory research is critical to identify and address future stakeholder needs. So this slide summarizes many aspects to consider when you think about the scope of the SRP Center grant. And we, in fact, identify these in the RFA under scope of the SRP Center grant. So the scope of this center grant is defined by the SRP mandates, which are, again, listed here. You heard from Dr. Sook. He read through them, but we encourage you to really pay attention to those as you're putting together your application. Research and supporting activities under this FOA may utilize a variety of approaches to achieve SRP's mandates. We ask you to please review the RFA and the suggested research topics and activities document and our other website resources for ideas on how you can fulfill the mandates of the SRP. It's also important that you review the SRP's strategic plan, as mentioned previously. This has information on how a center would include within its scope the relevance to Superfund, impact to stakeholders, and innovation, which should be transdisciplinary and paradigm shifting. It's also important to note that SRP is not a site-specific program. However, in the most broad sense, hazardous substances found at Superfund sites would be relevant to SRP. These substances would include hazardous substances that are found at Superfund sites. One might refer to the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, which is the CERCLA priority list website for more information. Other substances would include hazardous breakdown products from the substances that might be found at other hazardous waste sites, as well as processes and metabolites of these substances and breakdown products that are formed after exposure in humans or in environmental animal models. Again, lots of information is found in the additional resources link. We also have a list of hazardous substances, including emerging contaminants, that have been suggested to us by our SRP sister agencies, colleagues from EPA and ATSDR. So when you're looking for topics for your center application, it's important to consider programmatic balance. This means to please note when you're deciding what your center will support, you can see what we're already funding in that area. And again, a link is provided on this page. So finally, in the broadest sense, the center should demonstrate a link to Superfund and relevance to Superfund. So the components of an application. This pie chart shows you that an application should consist of these following components: biomedical research projects, environmental science and engineering, administrative core, which now includes research translation, data management and analysis core, community engagement, research experience and training coordination cores. Those that I've mentioned just now are all required. Optional would be research support cores. And we wanted to note that applications must successfully meet the minimum requirements, which is a minimum of 2 biomedical and 2 environmental science and engineering, as well as the 4 required cores, but that centers cannot exceed a total of 11 projects and cores. In addition, please note that new renewal proposals and resubmissions may submit a budget of up to $1.75 million a year for direct costs for up to 5 years. And just to point out some cost limitations for the direct, for administrative, community engagement, and the training coordination, there is not a budget set for the data management or the research support cores or the project. And then how this all fits together, there is an overall 20% of the total center budget for the 3 cores listed here, admin, community engagement, and the training. And the other 80% would be for the projects, the data management core, as well as any research support cores. Okay, so now we're going to shift gears and tell you a little bit more about, you know, what you should try to include in your application. And again, this is all coming directly from the RFA, but these are just points that we would like to emphasize to you. The overall is a component of the application, and as you might imagine, it summarizes what the overall center is proposing to accomplish. You should please make good connections between what your center is doing and the SRP mandate. We also encourage you to include how the center plans to solve problems related to health effects, risk detection, and remediation of hazardous substances, which essentially are the mandates. And we really like for, especially in your abstract, to include not a generic description of the center components, but rather an overall indication of the proposed science and what the center proposes to accomplish. So the description should include which hazardous substances are being evaluated, how they're relevant to SRP and to the Superfund in general. If you're working on study sites, what research approaches you're using, what model organisms and biological systems, which disease pathways you're targeting. In addition, this section should highlight aspects of the application that are particularly innovative or paradigm shifting. So it should be clear how the components of the center will interact to solve problems and the role of each project and core in contributing to resolving the problems stated in the application. The primary activities of the Corps should also be integrated into the description, and the benefits of the center in terms of improving health should also be included. In addition, each specific aim should be supported by a brief description of how that aim will be accomplished through interactions of the projects and Corps. You, of course, want to include the expertise that you have to accomplish these goals. The innovation of the science and the strength of the experimental approaches should all be described. And there are subsections recommended in the overall component. These would be the significance, relevance to SRP mandates and Superfund, the research team, innovation, approach, environment, and center integration. Please refer to the RFA for additional information about the overall description of the center. And a few things that we did want to note are the other attachments that would be included. There is a specific way to do that, and it is outlined in the RFA. Essentially, the file name provided for each attachment will be the same name used for the bookmark in the application image. This is just something we wanted to tell you because it will make it easier to reference your application once it's put together as a PDF, if you take that to heart. Specific descriptions are provided for each of these attachments within the RFA. And we wanted to point out that new to the RFA this year is a table of integration with the center. There are illustrations of these on our website on the Tips for Applicants page. In addition, there is an overall center resource sharing plan. And in this current RFA, you're asked to include within that resource sharing plan, in the overall component, a summary of the center data management and analysis. So this is just a general description of the type of data expected to be generated from the center. It's a synopsis of the proposed data management and sharing activities. So in this section, applicants may wish to highlight anticipated integration opportunities between projects and cores. Note, there is a full data management and analysis core, but that is a separate component. So this little section here would just be a summary of overall what's happening in terms of data management and sharing. And let's go to the next slide, where we just show some examples of the table. We do request a table of changes, and that's important for any renewal or resubmission application. There is a table of core utilization and a table of research approaches. These are very helpful for the reviewers as they consider the overall center because it gives an indication of how there's interactions in between the different projects and cores. And then especially so on our next table that we wanted to point out. This one is a new table, but we think it'll be very helpful for reviewers to understand how the center proposes to have integration between projects and cores. So shown here is just a very generic illustration of what we are conceiving of by this type of table. But essentially, we would like for the applicants to demonstrate how projects are truly integrating and what's the nature of the integration between projects and cores. Lastly, and I did mention this previously, but this is just another snapshot of what we're talking about with regard to the resource sharing plan. So at this point, this concludes the discussion of the overall section, and I'll pass it off to Danielle. She's going to speak about some of the components of the P42 project. Danielle?
Okay, thanks, Heather. So first, we're going to focus on the research projects. So you may have seen in the RFA, the center's research projects, a maximum of six, should emphasize a balance of basic and applied research that contributes to the problem-based, solution-oriented goal or goals of the center. The center's central problems should be addressed by the contributions of these projects, and each project should have the necessary biomedical and or environmental science and engineering expertise to address the center's central problem or theme. So let's start with the biomedical research projects. They're also known as the BMR projects in the RFA. As noted in the RFA, a minimum of two, maximum of four biomedical projects are required and should address biomedical or human health related implications of hazardous substances. We provide you with a list in the RFA and in our suggested research and activities document that would qualify for biomedical project topics, and you see for that here in this slide. A minimum of 2, maximum of 4 environmental science and engineering projects are required and should address environmental science or engineering implications of hazardous substances. These projects are integral to the protection of human health through predicting, detecting, and preventing exposures. Again, we provide suggestions in the RFA and the suggested research and activities documents for topic suggestions. I will also be providing some additional information about a new requirement about the environmental science and engineering projects in the next slide. But for now, we're still going to keep focusing on what both types of projects should require. So for both types of projects, each of the research projects should be standalone and should be hypothesis-driven or product-oriented research. Each project should also clearly contribute to the overall center objective, providing a clear step towards identifying solutions to the problem-solving goals of the center. Each project should relate to the SRP mandates, and those are health effects, risk detection, and or remediation of hazardous substances, and draw connection and relevance to Superfund as appropriate. Please make sure to include which hazardous substances are being evaluated, which research approaches are being used, and the exposure context as appropriate. Include information about the model organisms, biological systems, disease pathways, environmental media, etc., as well as any study sites that you're working at, if applicable. In addition, the project should highlight aspects of the application that are innovative, paradigm-shifting, and or gap-filling. Plans for engaging stakeholders or communities, if applicable, should be included. It is also important to highlight the significance of the research project, the expertise of the research team, and the innovation of the science, the details of the experimental approach, including rationale for the methodology, the strengths of the research environment, a timeline for project completion, as well as a description of how the project contributes to the overall SRP center. As such, the following subsections are recommended: significance and relevant to SRP mandates and Superfund, investigators, innovation, approach, environment, and center integration. It's also important to explain how the project advances knowledge or provides resources, technologies that could be utilized to improve human health, risk assessment, and or improve the quality of the environment, and how the project provides rigorous scientific data that may be used for effective decision-making by stakeholders. Research facility institutional support, including equipment, physical resources, and other features that support and facilitate collaborative and multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary research approaches should also be included. Applicants should include a description called the relation to the overall center that clearly states the relevance of the project to the goals of the overall center and how this project integrates with other projects and cores. You may also refer to your table of integration, as Heather mentioned previously, that attachment, this part of the overall component. And again, see the overall section for other attachments. Applicants are also required to comply with the instructions for the resource sharing plan as provided in the SF424 application guide. Projects are expected to include within their data management plan, within their data sharing plan, a data management plan, and an investigator-initiated research translation plan. The data management plan and the investigator-initiated research plan the data management plan should be cross-referenced in the data management and analysis core. So be sure to work with your DMAC leader and your research translation coordinator on this section. The investigator-initiated research translation plan should be cross-referenced in the administrative core's research translation functions. A description or a checklist of a data management plan and examples of investigator-initiated research translation activities are provided for reference in the suggested research and activities document on the website that's listed on this slide. Okay, so we've also added further guidance to the environmental science and engineering projects in the current RFA. As you all know, the SRP recognizes the importance of new environmental science and engineering approaches to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances in the environment, fostering the development of novel remediation approaches through designing new remediation platforms or assessing the efficacy of these platforms is an important contribution to accelerating the cleanup of hazardous substances and preventing exposures. For this reason, all applicants are required in this RFA to include at least one environmental science and engineering project that supports SRP's fourth mandate, which is basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. So for more information on how to develop one of these projects, make sure that you review the RFA section titled Scope of the SRP Center Grant, and also review the Suggested Research and Activities document, which lists some topics that are eligible to meet the requirements of Mandate 4. If you have any questions about whether or not your project qualifies, please reach out to SRP staff to ensure that your project is responsive to the RFA. And so these are just some tips as you put together your projects. So, for example, centers should be very judicious in assembling their research projects. A center should, with their projects, keep a clear focus and try not to do too much. Include projects with the most solid connection to the center's problem-solving theme. Also, please note that projects are often considered similar to an NIH R01 grant and are typically written in an R01 style. For those of you that might not be familiar with that type of grant, this is an investigator-initiated NIH grant. Also, please keep in mind that we are still in lean times, so you may want to consider coming in under budget as well as under the 11-component limit. This is especially true for new center proposals. Another tip is to be sure to cross-reference interactions between projects and cores, and these integrations should be consistent throughout. You can refer to your table of integration with center in the overall component to highlight those interactions. Finally, try to avoid jargon, especially in your titles and abstracts and summaries. Don't assume that all the reviewers will be well-versed on your project. Only the reviewers assigned to your project will be well-versed. Therefore, P42 reviewers have broad expertise. Make sure that you write your abstracts and titles for a general audience. Write your specific aims for technical experts. And don't forget to define those abbreviations. We highly encourage you to visit the NIH website on plain language. The RFA also has some suggestions for any projects that are community-based, so please look out for that. So now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Michelle Heacock, who will cover the various scores within a P42 center application.
Okay, so we're going to start with the administrative core, which is required in the P42 application. The administrative core, which includes a center director, research translator, research translation coordinator, more on that in a bit, and a center administrator, will provide leadership and guidance to ensure the synthesis of findings and activities from research projects and cores are used towards addressing the central problem objective proposed by the center. The application should include a description of the lines of communication among the center administrator, the research translation coordinator, and the center project and core leaders. There should also be a description of the mechanisms to be used to encourage and ensure the integration and interaction between the biomedical and environmental science and engineering projects. There should be a plan for coordinating data sharing and analysis activities, integration of cross-disciplinary research, overseeing of fiscal and resource management, and providing quality management. The core should describe a strategy for personnel management changes and, as applicable, succession plans. The core should provide points of contact for regular SRP-hosted conference calls or webinars on research translation, community engagement, and data management and analysis. I mentioned the research translation coordinator earlier, and this is new to this P42 RFA. All applicants are required to include research translation as part of the administrative core's function. This will help to facilitate and coordinate communication of the results, accomplishments, and the implications of the center's research stakeholders, including NIHS, SRP staff, to other SRP centers and other applicable stakeholders in a context that makes the research applicable to the target audience. As you might recall, in the previous RFAs, we've had a separate research translation core. Although research translation is now contained in the administrative core, the SRP is still committed to fostering translation of scientific accomplishments to support its mandates. The definition of research translation remains the same as in previous RFAs, as communicating and facilitating the use of research findings emanating from the center in a manner most appropriate for their application and the advancement of research objectives. Therefore, the administrative core should have a description for a plan of the following research translation objectives: communicating within SRP and to SRP staff, partnerships with government agencies, technology transfer, and information dissemination to other end users. Additionally, the administrative core should promote investigator-initiated research translation. So therefore, the administrative core has a critical role in assisting project core leaders in translating the research outcomes and activities to appropriate audiences and ensuring the accurate and timely use of products and sharings of findings. The administrative core will be responsible for ensuring that updates are made to the optional SRP data collection tool, the URL is on the slide, and the NIH CareerTrack database, and should designate points of contact responsible for reporting this information, as well as a plan for frequency of reporting. A point of contact should be indicated in the research strategy section for the regular SRP research translation, community engagement, data management and analysis core conference calls. Examples of research translation and investigator-initiated research translation activities are provided in the suggested research and activities document on the website you see on the slide. The SRP optional data collection tool allows grantees to inform SRP staff of centers' activities, such as webinars, meetings, interactions with stakeholders, trainee investigator awards, news articles, and publications. The NIH CareerTrack database can be found at the link on the slide, and please note that permission to use the database is only provided after award is made. To also aid in achieving its goals, the administrative core is required to establish an external advisory committee, an EAC, to provide guidance to the center director in the following areas: the scientific merit of the research and productivity, the relevance and importance of the individual components to the goal of the center, the integration of research across disciplines, the effectiveness of data sharing integration activities in linking projects within the center, the effectiveness of research translation functions in linking projects to stakeholders, the appropriateness of community engagement and training activities, and discussion of projects that should be continued, modified, or discontinued, and strategies for making changes to the projects. The composition of the external advisory committee should reflect the goals of the center and should include appropriate scientific expertise and appropriate stakeholders, which may include representatives from the EPA, ATSDR, industry, and or community organizations, for example. All applicants should list the anticipated target areas of expertise for the EAC members. New applicants should not list names of anticipated EAC members unless they provide input into the design of the application. Finally, I want to mention the budget for the administrative core is not to exceed $150,000 direct costs, and the center director must commit a minimum of 1.8 person months. The P42 application is also required to include a research experience and training coordination core, RETCC, to coordinate graduate and postdoctoral level cross-disciplinary research experiences and training in fields related to biomedical research and environmental science and engineering research. In the past RFAs, this was called the training core, but the name has been changed to reflect the true purpose of this core. Please recall the SRP defines trainees within the program as graduate students and postdoctoral researchers that perform research and activities that are supported by the center, while undergraduates are recognized as part of the research continuum and allowed to participate in the core's activities. The core should direct its opportunities to the center's graduate and postdoctoral trainees. The core should be designed to promote interactions between the biomedical and environmental science and engineering trainees. It should provide opportunities to enhance their professional career development coordinate opportunities for trainee participation in the Community Engagement Corps and the Administrative Corps research translation functions. Please note it is not mandatory for trainees to participate in the Community Engagement and Administrative Corps research translation functions, but highly encouraged. Also, we ask to promote trainee interaction with the Data Management and Analysis Corps, the DMAC, and provide information about the center's activity and trainees to the SRP. The Corps should also describe the activities and training opportunities for the center's trainees, which may include tailored curricula development, selected coursework to fulfill degree requirements, cross-disciplinary laboratory experiences, seminar series, journal clubs, workshop conferences related to professional development, and travel to scientific meetings, for example. The Corps should also provide a description of how the trainees' activities will be guided and how the trainees' performance will be monitored and evaluated. The Corps should also indicate its use of the NIH Career Track database. The RETCC training Corps should also provide points of contact for regular SRP-hosted Student Postdoc Alumni Network or SPAN Leadership Committee conference calls and webinars. So, for example, the RETCC, that's a mouthful, leaders and representative graduate students and postdocs from the center. And we have a link for you to look at. Also, please keep in mind that for renewal applications, inquiring reviewers want to know past trainee successes. This can be included in the trainee list that's required in the RETCC. So SRP centers may choose to include a research support core, a maximum of two, to provide essential centralized services or resources that will result in economy of effort and their savings to the overall costs of a center. They can also serve as a useful tool in promoting interdisciplinary activities and integration of the center's projects and cores. When proposed by a center, a research support core must support at least two or more research projects. Typical core facilities include laboratory facilities, analytical chemistry, omics support, or analytical equipment and services. A research support core is principally designed as a service or a resource component. It would be highly unusual to include research in a research support core. A possible exception would be a methodology development. In addition to the description of the core, and you'll see specific details about this description in the RFA. That should include how the core will be used as a resource to the center as a whole, discuss ways in which the center's centralized services will produce an economy or effort or savings and overall costs compared to their inclusion as part of each project in the center, research support cores that provide analytical and quantitative services to the applicant center should include a quality assurance section. This section should document a center's policy on implementing and assessing the effectiveness of its quality assurance and quality control operations. This guidance can be found at the URL provided on the slide. Be certain to reference a relevant table of research support and data management and analysis core utilization. This was described in the overall component for those projects that use the core. It's important that the core describe how data will be managed, collected, backed up, collated, transferred, stored, documented, and shared as appropriate, and coordinated with the DMAC. Also wanted to mention some pros and cons about research support cores. On one hand, they provide excellent interactions and integrations, opportunities for the center's trainees, and assurance of quality. Some of the cons are they may not be critical if the university already has available facilities that can be utilized. And keep in mind, an applicant needs to stay at the 11-component limit for the application. Also, we wanted to mention that since the research support cores are optional, they don't have a set budget. I'll now pass this to Brittany Trottier, who will talk about the Community Engagement Corps.
Thanks, Michelle. So now on to the Community Engagement Corps, which is also required. The purpose of the CEC is to ensure bi-directional communication between the CEC and the community, and also to direct the best practices and activities in community engagement for prevention and or intervention. This provides potential solutions to communities to reduce or mitigate the impact of hazardous substance exposure. Please recall that the SRP refers to prevention intervention as basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. Through exposure, prevention, and intervention, the CEC empowers impacted communities to be full participants in decisions to reduce the amount and toxicity of the hazardous substances, whether it be in their homes, their schools, their community, and in their environment. The CEC activity should also complement the research strengths and problem-solving goals of the center. The CEC should give a clear indication about which community or communities are planned for the partnerships, as well as which hazardous substances are impacting the community or communities. Applicants should highlight specific activities and innovative plans for engaging the community in appropriate prevention and intervention activities tailored to fit the overall goals of the center, and again, that complement the center's research. The CEC may work in partnership with the community or community-serving organizations such as local government groups, tribal councils, community service groups focused on educating the community about local issues, or non-governmental organizations working closely with the community. In addition, the CEC may propose the development of prevention intervention activities for economically disadvantaged and environmental justice communities, as these groups are frequently impacted by hazardous substance exposures. The CEC should be designed to fit within the theme of the center. It should include a timeline not to overlap with a study timeline for activities with milestones, a plan to measure and verify outcomes, for example, a logic model, approach and methodology for surveys and or sample collection, for example, biological monitoring, seafood, plant tissue, and or environmental media, and a process to guarantee effective bidirectional exchange between the CEC and the community of their needs, recommendations, and the results. A point of contact should be indicated in the research strategy section for the regular SRP research translation, community engagement, data management, and analysis core conference calls. Appropriate activities for the CEC may include capacity building, the development of tools or resources to enhance environmental health literacy and knowledge of exposures in the target community. In some cases, the CECs may choose to, but are not required to, include biological or environmental sample collection as a part of their core prevention and intervention activities. And I would like to emphasize that the CECs proposing to collect these samples should include details of sampling methodology, analysis, statistical calculations to ensure the best practices are being adopted and the communities are receiving scientifically defensible data. A variety of appropriate CEC activities and resources have been listed in the suggested research and activities document on the website in the bottom right corner. Next, I will pass it back to Michelle Heacock to introduce the Data Management and Analysis Core.
Thank you, Brittany. Now we'll tell you a little bit about the Data Management and Analysis Core, also known as the DMAP. Unfortunately, due to time, we can only go over the major highlights of the core. However, the RFA contains detailed information about the core, and since this is a new core, it's important you read the RFA carefully. So here are the highlights. We've created this core because SRP acknowledges that integration of data from a broad range of scientific disciplines will be critical to understanding and breaking the link between exposures and disease. Data represent important research products, and attention is needed to provide stewardship of the data and treat research as an asset. The primary purpose of the DMAC is to support the management and integration of data across the center. The DMAC should support and facilitate the management of data assets irrespective of data set size. It should establish, coordinate, and monitor processes for data analysis and work closely with project and core leaders to ensure high-quality data throughout the entire life cycle of the data. The DMAC also has a coordinating role to work with project core leaders to identify opportunities for integrating project and core generated data with other existing data sets. In addition, the DMAC should foster and enable the interoperability of data between biomedical and environmental science and engineering projects, accelerating the impact of the center's research. The core should outline specific objectives and goals in their comprehensive data management plan that include coordination with projects and cores, fostering data sharing and interoperability, and data quality assurance and quality control. The specific aim section should contain a brief statement about how the core integrates with each of the research projects and cores and how it helps to achieve the center's goals. The DMAC may also include additional functionality such as biostatistics, bioinformatics, geographic information center, systems, and computational modeling, these additional functionalities would be optional and should not detract from the data management and analysis responsibilities of this core. While it's not expected for the DMAC to create a repository for the center's data, the core should be familiar with databases that can be used to deposit the data and should develop a plan for project and core members to have access and use the data generated from the center with appropriate ethical controls in place. In addition, the DMAC should designate a point of contact to inform SRP staff of data set deposition through the optional SRP data collection tool and provide a point of contact for the regular SRP research translation, community engagement, data management, and analysis core conference calls. We also wanted to mention that this is the first P42 RFA with a DMAC requirement. So for renewal applications, if a center had a research support core with data management and analysis facilities and other DMAC-related functionalities, it is permissible to include as part of the DMAC research strategy a summary of activities carried out during the preceding performance period, including information on core utilization by the individual projects and our cores. For renewal applications without previous DMAC functions or facilities, this section is not applicable. You will see on the slide we have provided you with some links regarding data sharing policies and resources, and you are highly encouraged to review those as you put this core together. So to summarize, as you can imagine, there are many parts to a center, but to be successful, projects and cores need to be uniformly meritorious, demonstrate interaction, address a major problem, and aid stakeholders in effective decision making. Again, we cannot stress enough that if you are interested in developing an application, please do not hesitate to contact a SRP staff member. We are here to help. Now I'm going to turn this presentation over to Dr. Janice Allen, our Scientific Review Officer for this RFA.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm Janice Allen, and I wanted to tell you that others in the room, part of the review group, are Laura Thomas, second SRO assigned to this RFA, and Deborah Jones, an extramural support assistant who is assigned also. And Linda Bass, who was the primary SRO from last year, and she's graciously agreed to be here today in case there were questions that, you know, that came up last time or reflect review issues from last time. And many of you will have already seen these slides because I just modified the slides that she presented last year with some updates. So if we could go to the next slide. Just in general, now this is pretty much the same for, the review process is pretty much the same for all application mechanisms, but here specifically with the dates, you're encouraged to submit a letter of intent, and we'll go over that in just a bit, what I'd like to see in that, and that's November 19th, and then 1 month later, your applications will be due, and then as soon as we get those, it takes about a week for us here at the Institute to get those applications online, and then we will do an administrative review, which will designate whether your applications are responsive or non-responsive. Now, this is one area that I really is important for y'all to contact your Superfund staff, because there should really not be a reason for them to be scientifically non-responsive. Now, there are also technicalities that might designate this as well, but again, staff is here to give you guidance on this information. So then the review committee is formed. And those, probably many of you have served on NIEHS review committees. They reviewers have the expertise to review your application, and these people come from all over the United States, primarily universities. We have a good representation of the geographic areas in the country, as well as underrepresented minorities, and they will have experience in reviewing applications. This will take up most of the time that we have for establishing the review meeting, which will be held sometime in May of next year. And then, as you probably also know, the review committee determines whether or not your application is discussed or not discussed. But in both cases, you will get summary statements from the reviewers with the expertise needed to review your applications. It's just that in the non-discussed applications, you will not get a summary, a resume of the summary of discussion at the review meeting itself. And then these applications will go to October Council, and then funding decisions will be made after that. So to look at before you submit your P42 applications, again, you want to make sure you're in contact with the NIHS staff and discuss your applications with them. And then the LOI, or letter of intent, is very important to us in review in that we use this to start recruiting reviewers. They're not required, but they are extremely helpful to us. And listed here on the slide are what items you might include in the LOI. And some people even send us abstracts or specific aims pages. That's fine to do. And what you send us is not binding. You may, in the next month after this, decide a different emphasis in a project or core. So again, we just want a general idea of what kinds of reviewers we need to start recruiting. Also, and I'll mention this a little later, this is a clinical trial optional RFA, and it would be nice in this LOI if you could include if you are going to exercise that option. If you are new to submitting, just as Michelle said, we do not want you to submit us names of potential advisory committee members, unless, of course, they've been involved up to that point in the preparation of your application. This adding names will sort of limit our pool of reviewers because of conflicts, so we just would like you to list the expertise that you are planning on using in recruiting. So in the next slide, just an overview, the criteria are listed in the solicitation, and that references here listed for you. We will be reviewing the individual research cores and projects, but also very importantly, the review of the overall center. So each project and core will receive a score, but you will also receive the overview. So you can understand that when it was mentioned to be able to be sure and submit highly meritorious cores and projects that you do so, because these are all going to be reviewed. So in the next slide, we have, and I'm not going to go into detail here, most of you could probably state this better than I can, the five criteria that are used in reviewing an NIH-submitted application. There are five of them as listed here, and we scored them 1 to 9, from 1 being the best and 9 being the worst, which I don't like to use that word. But also we had two other criteria, contribution to the center as a whole, and then there are other specific criteria that do go into the overall scoring of your application, such as human subjects, animal care, biohazards, and the budget concerns are not considered in the score. So as I said, each project reviewed and receive a criterion score, unless, of course, the applications are not discussed, at which point they will not receive the summary or the overall impact score. So next in the cores, again, I think you've noticed by now an overarching theme in our presentations is that the integration, collaboration, and synergy of all your projects and cores are essential for a good scoring application. So we will evaluate each of the scores of the cores, and again, just refer to your RFA for the specific criteria. But let's just break down individually for a moment here the overall center. You want your overall center to address a critical problem relevant to the SRP, relevance and merit of projects and cores, the scientific gain of each of these to the center as a whole. Again, mentioning the integration, synergy, and collaboration of each of these entities. And then, of course, leadership. We as reviewers and as staff want to make sure that there's proper leadership, and the reviewers will evaluate you on that. So in the next slide, here just listed a few helpful hints. You want to read and understand the RFA. Reviewers will do this. They will be instructed to be to read the RFA and they'll know what you should be putting in here. So if you've left out something, then they're going to ding you for that. Again, contacting program and grants staff for any issues. Following guidelines such as page limits, font size, things like that which you really don't want to think about. It doesn't really contribute to the science, but we as SROs are required to pay attention to that, and applications may be sent back for these reasons. So again, if you have any questions about any of this, give any of us a call or contact us by email so that we can answer your questions. One thing that it doesn't matter if it's a center application or any application, you want to make sure you submit early. You want to start the process early, and probably many of you have already done this. But what I like to tell people is inform your grants office that you're in the process of doing this. Have them keep time for you so that they will be able to submit for you without any delay. And people sometimes feel, okay, I can submit the day before, that'll give me a day to take care of any errors, and I should be okay. Well, I can't tell you, I've had to send back applications, and it wasn't, I mean, I would let everybody in probably, but I am told, you know, that if errors you correct on one day, some of those errors don't get loaded into the system until the day after, and they are considered late at that point. So there's nothing any of us can do for you at that point. So please start early. Also, if you will go in after you submit it and you feel that everything's okay, go in and look at your application. Make sure all components are there, because if you can't see what should be there, then I can't see what should be there, and therefore, if sections are missing, your application may be returned. So just a few grantsmanship issues. Be clear and concise. Don't expect reviewers to know what you mean. That's been gone over previously here today. And just know that all the components are important. One weak project or core could impact the overall score. Also, be clear and concise in your write-ups, and because if you ramble a bit, that'll reduce the cohesiveness of the center, and you could be deemed for that. And too many projects sometimes will make your application sink under its own weight. And again, starting early will give you time to correct any problems that you may arise. And then I just want to show you some resources. The RFA webpage is extremely important. You should look at that, you know, regularly while you're doing this. There will be an FAQ section to this, and as we get questions, we will update those FAQs to include any concerns, because if you have a question, someone else may have a question as well, and we want to be fair across the board and not give one group an advantage by telling them something and not everyone else. I will also say that in the FAQs, I didn't think about until just a few minutes before this to give you some guidance on this new clinical trial optional aspect. So again, if you could include in your LOI, if you're going to activate that option, if you could let me know. And also in the FAQs, we will have a section for the clinical trial optional guidelines. So in the last slide that you'll need to pay attention to are, this is not new to you, but a lot of people contact me and say, well, where should I put the scientific premise or scientific rigor? And here is a table that tells you where these should go. Now, some people will make a separate little section with the appropriate heading, but a lot of people will just say, for example, for a scientific premise, if you, in the significance part, maybe a bolded sentence or two addressing the premise, that will be fine. It's just that you want to make the reviewers not hunt and search your application for things that they know they should be reviewing on. So bolding is good for that. We just don't want you to, you know, not miss out and not have it identified for the reviewers. And then the next few slides, which Danielle, if you could just pass through those, will give you more guidance as to scientific premise, rigor, consideration of relevant biological variables such as sex, and authentication of key biological and or chemical resources. Again, these are items that reviewers will be looking for, so I want you to, you know, make sure you know what you should be including. So the last slide here is our phone numbers and email for each of us, along with our review team. So you can contact any of us. You know, I know how it is to be doing something and you want to meet an answer right away. It's bugging you. You just, you know, can't go forward mentally at that point. So be sure and call on one of the rest of us if I'm not available, and we will get back to you as soon as possible. And I must say, I'm looking forward to reading your applications, and just contact us if you have need any information. Thank you.
So my name is Lisa Edwards, and I'm here to discuss your budget and how you should prepare your budget for this application. As has been mentioned previously, you will be using Assist to submit your application. This slide lists a link to a webinar for applicants of multi-project grants. Assist uses the SF-424 format for the submission of the budget. Please note that you must submit budget pages for all project cores and subawards. Next slide. This page lists the link to the SF-424 budget pages. I would also like you to remember to make sure that you are that you're using the most current policy statement. This document is often updated in October of every year since we will be entering a new fiscal year in October prior to the submission of your application. You need to make sure that you are using the current policy statement with the current salary cap. If your application scores in the fundable range, at that time you will be asked to submit your just JIT information, which will include the IACOC, IRB approval, other support, and any other summary statement concerns. Next slide, please. Your budget should be submitted as a detailed categorical budget. As mentioned earlier, you must submit a budget for each project, each core, and each subaward. And I'm sorry to keep repeating this, but we often get applications in and the subawards budgets are missing, and this will hold up an award if you are on the fundable range. You are allowed to request escalation in out years, but note that NIH no longer allows escalation, so it will be removed from your award before it is issued. To ensure that your budget is not cut in the out years, you should ensure that you provide a justification for any cost that is requested in the out years above what was requested in your first year. It is a requirement of the program that you include a request for travel of the center director, center administrator, and four trainees to attend the Superfund Research annual meeting every year. Next slide, please. This page just gives you more of the same. I want to emphasize again that you must submit budget pages for projects, cores, and any subawards. You must submit justification of cost. It is very important that if you are planning to have any type of changes in your out years, that you submit the justification for those costs in the out years, as anything that looks like an escalation will be removed from the application. The next couple of slides are going to list or show you examples or samples of what the budget pages will look like. This page that's up now consists of your personnel cost, which is sections A and B. You have your senior and your key personnel for section A, and section B lists your other personnel. The next page, you can go to the next page. The next page is actually consists of your section C through E. Section C is equipment. Section D is travel, and you should break out foreign travel and domestic travel. We do not use Section E. It is not a requirement of the application for you to submit information in this section. Next slide, please. And you can go to the date. Sorry. And sections F through K is where you would put the majority of your budget. This section is going to include your material and supplies, publications, your consortia cost, any types of other cost. It will also include your total direct cost, and your F&A cost will be broken out here. Next slide, please. You can skip over. And you will also have a composite page, which will total up all the costs for all of your projects, all of your cores, and all of your subs. The next slide gives you a list of resources. A list of resources that you can refer to while you're putting your application together. And that's it for me. Bill, sorry.
That's fine. Thank you. So, next slide. No, back one. Sorry, I got ahead of myself. Okay, well, first of all, thank you all for your attention during this funding opportunity web seminar. So I want to leave you with just two thoughts at this point, and this has been said before, okay? And, you know, redundancy is an important thing to have in this situation. Submit early. You are given a window of 3 days to correct any errors. If you wait until the last minute, You will lose the opportunity to correct errors, and your application could get rejected by the system for issues that could have been fixed in time. So that's one. Second, we are here to help you during this process. We encourage you to reach out if you are contemplating submitting an application, especially if you have not already been in touch with any of the folks here listed on this slide. In general, the program officers listed include Danielle, Michelle, and Heather, are a good first point of contact and can direct your questions to the right person. But we are all here to help you and encourage you, so reach out. The important thing that I want to say is that we want to be able to support the most meritorious science that we possibly can. And that requires a working relationship as best as we can under the circumstances and limitations of NIH. So with that, I want to thank you. And if you have any questions, oh, one more thing. Thank you. I would like to acknowledge those folks who are behind the scenes as our web gurus who have made today's webinar possible, including the folks at CLUIN, EPA CLUIN listed here. Thank you, Jean, and Sarah from MDB, who have allowed us to go through this whole process. So I realize we've covered an awful lot, but at this time we are open to questions, and I'm going to turn it over to our moderator, Brittany Trottier.
And just a reminder, you can put your questions in the Q&A pod in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. So for the first question that came in, are significance and innovation sections required for the CEC research strategy section?
This is Heather. I'll jump in because we've gotten this question before. In a lot of the cores, there's not as much specificity on what goes in section by section, unlike in the project. So what we would recommend is, of course, to read what's written in the research strategy description in the RFA section pertaining to your core, and then also be sure to look at the review criteria for that core and make sure that you're covering all the bases. Of course, you can include significance and innovation, but it is not specifically required in the community engagement core.
Okay. Our next question is the data management analysis core included in the sum of direct costs from administrative, community engagement, research, experience, training, coordination cores cannot exceed 20% of the total direct cost of the center per year?
No, the DMAC isn't included in that cap.
Okay. Our next question is a resubmission application included in the statement that new applicants should not list names of anticipated EAC members unless they provide input into the design of the application?
If you're resubmission, then you have a committee already. So those names would be, if you're using the same people, those names would be listed. If you're adding or deleting some people at that point, you would just submit the expertise that's needed, but not a new name.
And for further clarification, if this is a not previously funded application, so it was new, now it's a resubmission. So
again, I think we would consider it as new. And if you, unless those committee, the expertise, if you continue with those same members, then again, don't list their names unless they've helped you in preparation. But we would consider them as new and would just like their expertise.
Thank you. Okay, next question is, does the $1.75 million direct cost include consortium F&A, or is the limit $1.75 million less the consortium F&A?
The $1.75 million is less the consortia F&A, but please note when you're putting your application together, when you come up with your total direct cost, that amount is included in your total direct cost. We only take it out to look at what your cap is for submission.
Thank you. And are sub-awards to foreign universities allowed?
Yes, they are allowed.
Okay. For the training corps, would trainee travel be considered a participant support cost?
No. Trainee travel should be entered on the travel line, not as a participant cost.
Another budget question. Should the salary for individuals above the salary cap be budgeted at the actual salary or salary cap?
It is recommended that you request the actual salary of the person at the time of submission, because there are often times where the salary will increase after your application has been submitted. And please note, if it is requested at a cost that is over what the salary cap is, that will be taken into consideration if your application is selected for funding, and that any overage will be taken out. Thank you.
Is there a strategic plan for 2015 to 2020 or 2020 to 2025?
So the RFA refers to the SRP strategic plan as 2015 to 2020.
Thank you. Is there an annual increase in budget allowed? Oh, you answered this one, such as 2%. Okay.
You can request a 2% escalation in the budget, but please note right now NIH is not allowing it, and it will be removed from the application if you're selected for funding.
Thank you. Next question is, are the training efforts expected to be innovative?
Short answer is yes. It's not exactly stated in the RFA, but if you can be innovative in what you promote with the trainees.
They're also part of the project, too.
Yeah, and they're part of, yeah, they're exactly. Dr. Sook was just saying they're also part of the project, so that's, you need to be innovative within your projects as well. So, yes, innovation
right.
will be seen very highly.
Yes.
If submitting a resubmission of a renewal, do we follow both resubmission and renewal instructions in the RFP?
I would encourage you to talk to your assigned program officer about that. I mean, there are certain sections that, for the most part, you would be following the resubmission guidelines, but there may be some aspects that, as a renewal, you would include, like your success in the prior years, particularly anyone who's on an A1 resubmission for renewal. Contact your PO if you have any specific questions about that.
Okay, and are the core limits, for example, $150,000 direct cost for the admin core, a yearly limit?
Yes.
Is the research translation goal mainly focused on projects that are linked to the research translation rather than projects that span the overall theme of the program?
We understand this. If we don't answer your question correctly, just resubmit it, just in case we're answering, we're not answering what you're asking. But I think you're asking, where do you put the research translation focus? And what we would ask is you would want to make sure each project has a investigative-initiated research translation strategy, and research translation efforts are coming through projects individually. But of course, by default, it's going to also be as part of the whole center.
Okay. What is the total allowable budget?
We haven't put a cap on the budget for the DMAC. We see that individual centers who are going to be applying are going to be at different levels of sophistication in terms of their data management and analysis. So we would expect the budget to come in as appropriate for the how far along a given center is in their data management analysis.
Is the proposal PI the center director? Could you comment on the leadership of the center and the cores, areas of expertise, experience in managing centers, or large research groups and collaborations?
So if I could answer that, yes, the center director is the PI that will be submitting the application, but I think for some of the other discussion, it's probably best that you contact us so we can give you some more guidance on about the expertise and experience and what that, again, you know, typically center directors are pretty well versed in writing grants as well as leading other centers.
Okay. Let's see. Do we contact Dr. Allen or Dr. Thomas with questions on content? For example, the training core, is there a required curriculum? Is there a requirement for diversity recruitment? Do we need to describe our IDP process, ethics research? And it appears only be 12 pages and not 25.
Yeah. So again, you know, the training core now is the research experience and training coordination core. It is no longer 25 pages. We do not follow the NRSA format anymore, and so it's more or less the same format as the other cores. So I think if you have specific questions, it's probably best that you contact a program officer. Regarding the RETC is how we've been calling it now.
So when you say escalation, does that include salary increases to account for inflation?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Do indirect costs on subcontracts count towards the cap on allowable direct costs for the program?
Can you repeat that?
Do indirect costs on subcontracts count towards the cap on allowable direct costs for the program?
No. As stated earlier, the F&A for consortia costs is excluded from the cap max of 1.75.
Okay.
Why is still a lot of money?
Okay. I can't answer the question. I'm going to go back to that one if I can, because I can't read the full one. Okay, so...
Do you want me to read it? I have it up.
Can you see the whole thing?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, yeah. Do you mind?
So the question is, the RFA states, under the research strategy section of research projects, the following subsections are recommended. Significance and relevance to SRP mandates and Superfund, investigators, innovation, approach, environment, and center integration. A similar list of subsections is recommended for the overall component as well. The questions are, do these subsections together need to be within the 12-page limit set for the research strategy section, which normally contains only significance, innovation, and approach subsections? Do you want to try that one first? You did, looking at Dr. Henry, since she presented the overall component.
Sure. I do believe all of that would be included in the research strategy section.
12 pages.
Mm-hmm, the 12 pages.
And then the second question was, how do the recommended subsections apply to the research strategy section of the optional support course?
And again, this relates to an earlier question, but again, you know, the cores are not going to be getting the criterion score, with significance, investigator, innovation, environment, and approach. It doesn't mean that you don't want to include those as part of your core, but it's just not broken down that way like a project is. So again, we ask that you look at the research strategy description in the RFA for your component and make sure that you're including all of the sections that are requested or required for that particular core. And then also be sure to check the review section for your core criteria and make sure that you include sections to address all of the things that the reviewers will be looking for. It's a lot up to the investigator, him or herself, to put that together. It's not very prescribed.
Okay. So investigator, this is typically derived from the bio sketch. It seems that we are being asked to add a section to the research strategy section on investigators. Is that correct?
Well, I think we reiterate in the RFA that you should not repeat what is in the bio sketch. But I think as far as it being related to, you know, do you have the ability to accomplish this project, it's going to be important that you do mention at least something. But again, it's important that there's no overlap with what's in the bio sketches.
Okay. Are there new elements of the community engagement core? No, but we would have you refer to the RFA of what we expect of the community engagement core, and there we would like an emphasis on and intervention prevention strategies to reduce the substances, so just please refer to the RFA.
And we also tried within this presentation that anything that was new or has changed, we tried to make sure we pointed that out in red font.
And one more thing, just to note, and remember, and this was something that Brittany emphasized, was that if there is biological or environmental sample collection as part of community engagement core, we really want to see those methodologies mentioned as part of an approach. And that is described in the RFA, so I would encourage you to that.
So for research, since research translation is now a part of the admin core, do we respond to reviewer critiques in the admin introduction?
Yes.
Okay. Is there an order to the cores? Does the RETC come before the DMAC?
I think it's probably important that you follow with what is in ASSIST and also with the RFA.
Whatever makes sense.
So the inhalation core, should it include vertebrates even though they're under the project's
ICUP?
It's probably, I mean, maybe Dr. Allen, would you like to try to?
Sure. You should, under the birth and animal section, supply that information.
And I would think that you'd want also within the project, you want to state the IACUC that it's been approved within, but you might want to reiterate that when you talk about the core as well, so that way it shows that there's crosstalk between the inhalation core and the project.
And if I'm not mistaken, this is a just-in-time issue with IACUC assurance numbers. And yeah. So if you don't have your IACUC approval when you submit, it will be asked for once you before an award is made.
Okay, and when does ASSIST open for uploading documents?
It's open all the time.
November 19th.
It would be whenever the receipt date of the application is.
Yeah, I think November 19th is when the LOI.
Right.
And also, that's the start date of when you can submit.
When the letters are sent, the start date, so the month before.
November 19th.
Yeah. And this might be a good opportunity to just remind people that that really a great resource, especially in the heat of putting in that application, is to call the ERA Help Desk, because they are up to date on all of the nuances of how you put your application from all the many Word documents and everything, and up might have that phone number and email address handy, especially as we get closer to October, November, and December.
And FAQs, you can put it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and since it's now 2:30, I wanted to make sure that everyone is aware of the related URLs pod, which contains the related links, the seminar feedback links, and on the seminar resources page, we have assembled resources directly applicable to today's topics. This will stay with the seminar indefinitely, so you can access it after the presentation. We place these seminars in an archive with a soundtrack, and in the near future, you'll be able to access those to hear the presentation as it was given today. So I would like to remind the participants of the various ways to study to stay connected to ensure you don't miss any webinars. For more information on EPA's CLUIN webinars, please refer to the CLUIN.org website. You can also subscribe to the free monthly e-newsletter, TechDirect, and follow CLUIN on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We also encourage you to visit the SRP Risk E-Learning webpage for more information about upcoming webinars and SRP Research Base to read about research coming out of the program. You can also follow SRP on Twitter. So with that, it's time to conclude today's webinar. If you submitted an online question and we did not have time to get to it, we will take a look at it and follow up with you. If you have additional questions, you can also contact us via email, and our email addresses are on the seminar homepage on